fucks happen.
Dude, fuck.
What was I watching? I've watched it.
Ready Player One.
No.
That's what you were
watching. Oh, it's the opening to Far Cry. Yeah. When you get the you got the Duchess, obviously, right? The bunker. And he goes, "How about you and I try to unfuck this?" And I was like, "You can't unfuck stuff, man. Otherwise, we'd have a lot less children that weren't wanted."
Well, you can't unfuck people, but you can unfuck situations.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's like what's the difference between a pregnant lady and a light bulb? You can unscrew.
Okay. Light bulb. Yeah. I didn't want you to say the joke because I saw it going in a way worse direction. I was like, we're going to have to start over the podcast.
That's the way the joke goes.
No, that joke's fine.
Oh.
I saw you taking it some ways way worse.
What, like people like light bulbs?
Nope.
Can we keep trying?
We're not going to do this.
Uh-uh. You know what we are going to do?
What?
Comes naturally, we are.
Joe.
Mike.
I'm Cody. We are going to talk about two different movies today.
Yeah.
Nah. Two different movies. Nah. We'll go through one real quickly, and then we'll spend a lot of time on the other one. So, first movie we're going to talk about is Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yeah.
We're going to call it Pacific Rim 2.
Which you shouldn't, because there's no 2 involved.
It's the second one.
Yeah, well, that's not how that works. You don't get the name stuff. Anyways, so we'll do our normal...
Clint Eastwood 2.
Just Clint Eastwood, just the clone, and they didn't tell anybody. Yes. Anyways, so we're going to do a normal thing. We're going to go around the table, starting with Michael. We're going to do, did you like it or didn't you like it? Your top three things you liked, and the one thing you were surprised by. Michael, go.
I liked it.
Okay.
I was worried about it being garbage.
We know.
And it wasn't garbage.
There you go.
Top three things I liked about it. Number one, I like John Boyega.
Yeah, he was really good in this.
I've seen him in a couple things outside of Star Wars. But this was him kind of playing like a cool fucking full of himself, but still capable. Yeah, you know, I don't know. He just played it funny. Like he had some good chops in this one. So he was really, really good. Second thing I liked was the final battle was pretty amazing. There's a weird little drawback to that is the final battle, the whole final battle sequence, the one where...
By the way, we're going to spoil stuff.
Yeah, that's a spoiler. So,
I'm just letting you know.
I was kind of annoyed by the lack of it, you know, because like Pacific Rim... It was like every act had a cool fucking kaiju versus
Jaeger
sequence in it. This one, you didn't really get that. It almost felt smaller.
With regards to the kaiju, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, you had some other, like there was a cool fucking Jaeger versus Jaeger thing that came out of nowhere. And you're like, what the fuck? Why is this happening? But you didn't. Like I was kind of missing the giant monsters versus giant robots during the whole movie, but that last sequence more than made up for it. I was like, all right, well, this is super dope. And the third thing I liked about it is it's actually really clever way of reintroducing the kaiju into the whole situation. I was like, when you see. And I'm spacing on his character's name, but Charlie Day's character,
Newt.
Go home for that first time, and he's relinking up with that brain again. You're like, oh, well, this is weird. This is definitely going to come into play, but you don't know how it's coming into play. You just know it's fucking weird.
Like you're going to find out he has this inside link to... The kaijus.
Yeah, but then like you instantly start thinking, we're like, okay, well this is not good because in the first one the good guys were able to get information, but the kaiju were able to kind of read their thoughts and get their plans. So you're like, well, he's still doing this. Obviously there's some kind of weird addiction thing here. And this is bad because even if he gets good intel and he's like a good guy or whatever, that means they're getting intel on us. So I was like, well, this is weird. I don't know how this is playing out yet. And then when you get the reveal of what's going on, you're like, all right, yeah, okay, I get that. Like, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it did a good, like, I was like, all right, that's a whole completely different way of approaching it than I would have thought a sequel would have come up with this, knowing that in the first one we closed the rift and everything was cool. And you're thinking, is they just going to reopen it would be kind of lame.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Excuse me. And so, yeah, so have this new way. And then finding out that only three got through during three their... Yeah,
during, it was pretty awesome
during their takeover kind of moment. It kept it small enough to where that small group of people that were left to pilot the Jaegers were able to. It's not going to be ridiculous to think they could, like, had it been like 20, like,
yeah,
that group would have been fucked, or else it would have thrown off the whole dynamics of the well, how the first one set it up to where, like, you're going to need 2-on-1 for some of the bigger ones, or and, like, it just nothing advanced that much where you gave them a good shot. So yeah, the I thought that was the coolest thing is their way of kind of reintroducing what was going on and having it be clever and still make sense and just be a cool original way to doing it. Surprise, right? Was the
what were you surprised by?
Was I surprised by this is not really, I knew he wasn't going to be in it, but like how you're dealing with the lack of the cast of the first one.
Yeah.
I was like, I feel like he could have done something else.
I mean, I kind of want to know what did, so at the end of the first one, obviously you're talking about Riley, right?
Yeah.
He and, I'm spacing her name right now. I'm looking at the list. Mako. We're kind of like, you know, hitting it off in the little escape pods. We start
making out.
But you'd expect, like, to hear about him.
He's got to be
not be able to, you know, like, he's got to be. But he, you know, he couldn't get back in the air because he got too much damage or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He just can't link up or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's the just to know that he's out there somewhere. They do mention him, I think, like once or twice. But that's about it, you know? It would have been nice to know, like, what happened. Did he die?
I kind of joked about this after we saw the movie, but I thought there was an opening to have him have a cameo and would have taken a day of shooting.
If that, yeah.
Like,
they could have shot it almost anywhere.
Yeah, and I really was kind of in my head. I was like, yo, we might... Because they make reference when Clint Eastwood's kid... is co-piloting the new Gypsy, what's the new
Avenger.
Gypsy Avenger, and they reference how his co-pilot left for the private sector for more money.
Yep.
And in my head I'm thinking, is that's right. Him, like, yep. that's mm-hmm. That's who's leaving, because they don't think they say his name.
Nathan.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or no, so, not Nathan, Nate's his name. I can't, they do say his name,
but it's not at first though.
That's the first time you see it.
Yeah.
When Julie talks to them and says, you know, blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah. So, but I was like, in my head, I was like, well, that could have been, you know,
yeah.
that could have been your opening right there. And you, at the very end of the movie, you see the tiny, what's his name again?
Newt.
No, the tiny robot.
Oh, Junker?
Scrapper come in to make the save. I was like, that would have been a perfect fucking opportunity to be like, oh, he's still there, and they fucking, after everything went down on the base, he got like an emergency call from somebody and they're like, we have one more fucking one you could pilot, they need some help, and he could have made the heroic save right there at the end. I thought that was a bummer that they didn't do something with that. But, I mean, the way it was done was still cool. It doesn't take away anything from the movie. I just wish they kind of handled the absence of those characters a little bit better.
And what's crazy about that is, speaking of that, you don't even see footage of him. Like, you see footage of Idris Elba's character, and you see the portraits of the fallen Jaeger pilots, and obviously Riley, we don't know, hasn't died, so you don't see him up there. But even like when they're like when Jake, John Boyega's character, is talking about his father and like the they show him, you know what I mean? And they mention when they mention Riley, they don't even show him.
Yeah,
and it's like. That's super weird. Like,
seems weird, right? You know, everything seems like, a little odd with
that. Idris Alba obviously gave them the rights to use his likeness in the in it. I mean, there's even a picture of Jake Mako and Pentecost at the Striker at the in that one little picture, right? But it's like nothing of him at all. Nothing of Riley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not even like the last thing Mako looks at. Before she, oh, spoiler, she dies, is a picture of him. You know what I mean? Not even that. It's like, it was so weird to me. And I realized he didn't want to do it without Guillermo because Guillermo, this was, the property was taken away from Guillermo because the studio technically owns it. But I was like, that's.
He still had a credit in the.
He was game. Visual consultant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't he some type of producer, though, too?
He's yeah. He's well, like he has one of the many executive producers, like, yeah, because yeah, he created it, yeah. But he wasn't like, you know. It wasn't like executive producing,
and you can't tell, because as much as I like this movie, like if you grade it on a scale like 1 to 10, the first one in terms of like a good popcorn flick, like the first one's a 10,
easily.
Like it's a great movie theater time. Like it's just a fun time at the movie theater. This one is good, but it's like an 8. You know what I mean? Like it's not as fun, I don't think. And that's, I mean, most movies are in that range anyway, the good ones. So it's not a knock on that, but you could definitely feel there's a lack of Guillermo del Toro's touch on this one.
Yeah,
you get used to that in the first one, and like this is the world you set up, and there's a little something missing that you get from del Toro's movies that you know was in the first one. That
there's this gothic overtone,
yeah, of everything noticeably that touches, not there in this one. So that part was kind of weird.
And the thing is, like, and obviously it's like a completely different team making it visually, you know, or like, you know, cinematography and all that fun stuff. I don't even know if it's the same effects studio doing it, but to talk about that, like that part before we jump to Joe, is the look and feel of the first one is even more so different than a lot of other Guillermo movies because it's a much bigger affair. You know what I mean? It's like it's drastically different than anything else he's made. Even like the second Hellboy, where there is a lot of bigger stuff going on, it's even far away from that. But it still has that gothic, very dark look. You know, most of the fights are done at night. You know, and they're still very, you know, gritty. This one, you could tell like the visuals just in themselves were different. The way they shot it, the close ups of the actual Jaegers, the close ups of the people running them, that stuff was different. But it's like when you watch Alien and you watch Aliens.
Yeah.
There's a
giant, same world, yep, very different movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Very different everything. You know, so like the first one was this underdog story, and the second one was like, nope, we're on the same fucking playing field, motherfuckers. Let's do this. You know, that sort of thing. That's what I kind of felt about it. But anyways, Joseph, go.
So my three favorite things.
Did you like it?
Yes, okay. I really liked it.
Now your three favorite things.
My three favorite things, and one of them actually is the my surprise of the film.
That works too.
That works too. I know.
Yeah, you can do that.
So I really liked the first battle between the two Jaegers.
Yep.
It was surprising. That's not my surprise part, but yeah, that it was like, you know, oh shit, was there a kaiju that was left over or something? Because they're suddenly detecting up. Yeah, and you're like, oh, it's a Jaeger.
And the way it comes up, too, is very,
very kaiju.
And then, obviously, later on, we find out why.
Yeah. So that's my first favorite part. My second favorite part would be the ending battle was,
oh yeah,
just from beginning to end.
So much fun.
So much fun just to watch. My third is the surprise of it was actually the Charlie Day plot line.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because you would have never guessed he was the air quotes, bad guy.
Right, and you guys mentioned about the brain in the tank. I thought it was funny. He walks in, and he's talking to somebody, and you're like, is he married? Is he with somebody? And back in my head, I was like, oh, no, he's talking to, like, a AI or something, or, you know, something stupid because...
It's new.
His character doesn't... Yeah, it wouldn't fit with his character to be living with somebody, it felt like. But he is, and it's a fucking kaiju brain.
Yep.
But did you guys notice that it has like a heart on it?
And it says Alice on the glass. And it says Alice
on it. And I was like, oh, this is creepy. Yeah. He gets into it. And it
well, because when you flash back, when it's Herman, you see it. It's the exact same one that they linked up with. I was like, oh, that's fucking clever.
Right. And shit, I got that. But to sit there and put together that he's been manipulated by the, what'd they call them?
Precursors.
And essentially taken over by them was a complete surprise to me.
Yeah. Oh, it was a really good way to do it, yeah.
And he played that really well, I think.
Yeah. This is... I was surprised how good he was.
Yeah, he got to flex some acting muscles in this one. Because he had to play like this bipolar fucking very apologetic because he doesn't want to be doing what he's doing.
Yep.
And then... flying off the handle kind of crazy and very violent. It was fun to see him get to do that.
And the cockiness that kind of ramps up.
Which is hard to do, too, because that could have come off really fucking cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, that whole storyline could have been just really bad if it was a couple wrong turns here and there and then performed in a slightly different way. Just could have been real shitty. But he knocked it out of the park, man. He did a really, really good job. Made it fun and still kind of creepy in his own way, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's mine.
Good job, Joe.
Cody?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. A lot of people have asked me. I do not think it's better than the first one.
No.
It is probably one of the best sequels to a movie that technically didn't need a sequel. And we talked about this before. And I don't even know if Guillermo had an idea really when he made the first one, how the second one would go. And obviously he was getting ready to work on the second one and delays in the studio and blah, blah, blah. They're like, we don't want to make it. That's why it took like fucking almost 5 years to make. I think it was like 2013, I think is when the first one came out. It was 2013 or 2014, I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was a handful of fucking years. Like, yes. It went by. I liked it a lot. My three favorite things, one of them definitely was and I'm going to combine the two, is the Gypsy Avenger versus Obsidian Furies fights together. The one in Sydney and then the one later in
where he actually takes him out.
Yeah.
And you find... Yeah. Yep.
So I like that because there's this line that is thrown out. And it's not a throwaway line. It's obviously there's a reason for it. But it's said that he, like, when they're talking about Jake, about how he's... which is John Boyega's character again? How he has all these records and he's supposed to be this amazing pilot because of his dad, but then you find out obviously through the movie he's not, like he's never really. And then they say he's never been in combat, so the first time he's ever in a combat situation when they do the landing, they're like he's like focus, and he's like, oh shit, yeah. And they even show you when they're synced up, it's only at 62%. You're like, oh, they're still not meshing together. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you see that even in the battle because they're struggling to hold the helicopter carrier, and then they kind of get a couple good licks in, but they get their ass handed to them for the most part very easily. But the second part of that is when they go after Obsidian Fury. Well, they don't go after it. They go to
investigate that
plant that used to be where they made the cores, mm-hmm. and it shows up. And then they have I would have liked that fight to be a little bit longer.
Meh.
But for the most part, it was really cool because you saw them obviously working better as a team. And even he says, you remember our move? And they do the whole slide and fucking swirl around and cut him. And they fucking cut him deep. That's done really well. And again, that could be the script. It could be visual stuff. But what I was talking about is the reason I say they did that really well is because there's a big reveal in that end of that scene, which I will spoil in a second. But before that, you see how the Jaeger acts the same way Obsidian Fury acted was the same way when Gypsy Avenger got injured at the Sydney fight, then he gets cut, he grabs it. You see the Jaeger grab it, because as we know from knowing both movies, they feel what the Jaeger's feeling, right? Because they're linked to it, like, yep, their brains are linked to it. So you see them both reach and they grab that area where they got cut. And it does the same thing when they slice him. You see him like grab it,
mm-hmm,
and you're like, oh, so obviously the pilot is feeling it. Then you find out the big reveal is the pilot is actually a kaiju brain, and it's the reason it feels it is because it's linked to the robot. But it's then you find out a little bit later it's actually grown muscle fiber throughout the actual Jaeger's body,
yeah,
and is actually part of it. It's essentially a fucking kaiju wearing Jaeger armor.
And those crazy looking ones that attack the base.
Yeah, the drones.
Yeah, yeah. Those were gnarly.
That was so well done too. And that's actually that was gonna be my third one, but we'll bring it up now. That's fine. And it's not because it's lesser than the other one, that was the one I was gonna go to. But I'll do the second one. I like that because for two reasons. One is a story thing. And you have to think about it because it's not really told you directly, but just the way it's done, because you start to see it, you see the one hand twitch and he goes back to the command center where Newt is in there and he's talking about, oh, 100%. All of a sudden the pilot starts losing control and you see the screens behind turn red and all the drone pilots are freaking out. And then it cuts back to the Shatter Dome and you see him freaking out, and that's when it zooms in and you see the kaiju material busting out of the drone, out of the little brain thing. They have a weird for it. The piece that links the drones to the pilots. You know,
it was the AI core.
Yeah, the AI core. Yeah, the core. That's what I was looking for. And it erupts, and you realize that, oh, not only did he put in a protocol in the back end so he could then initiate this, but inside all those cores is that kaiju that's going to basically erupt, and it gives you two things. One is it gives you that, oh, this is what it's going to look like. This is what, that's how they get that monster look to him. Mm-hmm. But also that's was his plan all along, but it also plays later on when my second one was going to be the end fight one, is done. But the reason I say story wise is because, you know, those are being delivered out to all the Shatter Domes. The one we were at, obviously lucky enough to survive the attack, mm-hmm, but obviously the other ones weren't, and that's why there's no other Jaegers that are available, because other Shatter Domes that were being delivered to were overrun by the drones, and they didn't win. Just like our team didn't really win either. They got lucky because they shut it down.
Yeah.
They were gonna die. Mm. And one of my favorite things is the way that the kaiju infested drones were fighting was savage.
Oh, it was very kaiju.
Yeah, and but it was
they
cool.
Were still able to use the weapons
that
were attached to them.
Yep. Yeah. So just like Obsidian Fury was, because it was, you know, laced with them.
Right. But these were more animalistic.
Yeah, they were very, because they kind of erupted differently versus being kind of contained in the armor. Yeah. But yeah, they growled on them, like the fucking face opened up all fucking Predator style. But even when they shot missiles, it was left of just sitting there and it shot missiles, and more of like an actual physical attack where they're kind of like throwing the missiles with the movement of their body, you know? It wasn't just like a calculated, like, oh, I'm going to shoot a rocket. It was like this lean into it, you know, shoulder bump. But the one that got me the most is the head stomp.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fucking vicious, because you realize there's two fucking Jaeger pilots strapped in and they're not getting out of that.
No.
But also that with the last one right before they shut them all down, was it jumps over and it lands there, you know what I mean? After the first one's head got literally blown off by it and he stomped on his head, just that looming over him. Mm-hmm. I was like, and you get to see like kind of like a shot over the shoulder of it, and you see how little squishy people are at the bottom. And I was like, oh, we're going to lose some people here, right? Like, is this where Clint Eastwood 2 dies? Is this how he goes out? Because you see in the trailer, there's a part where you see them fighting together, and then later on in the trailer, you see her and John Boyega's character.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, obviously something happens to Scott Eastwood, or Clint 2. And so you know something's going to happen. Luckily, that's just a nice way to edit it, because yes, there is something that happens to him, but he's not out of, you know, out of commission, and he gives a
yeah. They got to keep some people for the third one. They can't recast the whole fucking thing again.
Yeah,
right.
This time they're planning for a third one, and so to go along with Mike's and Joe's, my third one now will be the final fight scene. I like that because it's like that. There's four Jaegers against the kaiju.
Initially three kaiju.
Yeah, which originally three kaiju. But I like the fact that all three of those kaiju were different,
mm-hmm.
but they were just like the other kaijus, they were upgraded by the precursors for those things. Like the main big one, what the category five had that ability to close his face and take and absorb that energy and then push it back out through a punch or whatever. Very Black Panther-ish.
Yeah, he had the Black Panther suit.
Yep. I like the way they did that because it was that part where it wasn't once they figured out, oh, the faceplate's taking the brunt of that, they started attacking its neck and its body, and it had no idea what to do. It was like, you're supposed to punch me in the face. All of our information tells you you're going to punch me here. You're not doing it. It's my weapon is this. The surprise, you guys talk about the other stuff, so I don't have to. The surprise thing about it to me, my surprise one, was seeing it the second time today, they basically foreshadow everything right from the get-go. And it's even the first attack by Obsidian Fury, the first Jaeger to have a kaiju insides, the one that was a brain. The way it fought, the way it entered, obviously,
yeah,
because it gave you that. It must, like, the birds are coming in. You see the water, and you're like, oh, it's gonna be a fucking kaiju. How did they not get the sensors? And then it's a Jaeger, and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah,
and you kind of get this idea: is this one of the drones is going to fuck up a piloted one to show how good they are?
Yeah,
and then like, but then the thing it got me is the arsenal it had. It had the missiles, but it did that whole the spine opened up and it did the basically blocked all the radio frequencies.
Uh huh.
And I was like, oh, now I know, because I knew at that point, because I'd already seen it the first time, what was happening. I was like, oh shit, they literally gave you all the clues needed from the very beginning of this movie to know that something's going on. So as you watch it a second time, you'll see those steps, and it literally leads you to the point where, yes, Newt is the bad guy, and he's been taken over by the precursors, and he's been behind the whole thing. And I was like, that is really clever.
Yeah.
I thought that was very well done. Because it even tells you what's going to happen with, like, is the... When... Herman is talking to Newt about his rocket theory, and he's talking about how the kaiju blood reacts to the rare earth elements. That's setting up for the plan, and I don't even know if, because when he said that, that's when Newt shut down.
Yeah.
And I was like, a second time, I was like, fuck, that was his plan the entire time. And even though Herman doesn't know it, he stumbled upon it, and then Charlie has to shut him down, like, that's not going to work, you're going to blow yourself up.
Yeah.
And I was like, the second time I saw it, I was like, oh man, this is the plan the entire time. I was like, that's so well done.
Yeah.
You know, and if you, seeing the second time helped me, obviously, see all those things, because I knew it was happening, I knew it was going on, so I could, when things happen, I can refer to it. But like for a first time viewer, only time viewer, you have to think back on it.
Yeah.
I had that, you know, I have the ability to remember it from the Thursday and remember it today. So that was really surprising to me how well that was done. But that's it for that.
I do have one question, because I did get up and go to the bathroom at one point in the movie.
Missed almost nothing.
I missed almost nothing, but I was a little confused. Like, I as I was walking out, they were explaining what if the kaiju weren't just attacking cities randomly. They were
going somewhere, and
they're going to Mount Fuji. I come back when they're pretty much all, where they're gearing up to go to Mount, where the Jaeger pilots are going up, gearing up to go to Mount Fuji. What was their reasoning?
So the what they figured out is they extrapolated data from the first set of kaiju attacks from the first movie,
mm-hmm.
and realized that they weren't attacking the cities; they were making their way to Mount Fuji. And
right.
the reason why is one of them was gonna just, and what's really clever about it is it's very much like the plan the Jaegers had to close the breach. They were going to sacrifice one of the Jaegers. Their news, they're going to sacrifice one of the kaijus into Mount Fuji, causing a global event where the blood would mix with the rare elements.
That's the rare elements are in Mount Fuji.
And so what I'm saying is with the whole plan, when Herman tells Newt his plan of using the kaiju blood and these rare earth elements to make a very combustible fuel source to use for the rockets, it's not just setting up the fact that that's how they're going to use the rockets later in the movie. Newt shuts down because he realizes that's his plan, and he doesn't want to let Herman know that that's actually going to work, just gotcha. Not in the same way. So, yes, you did mess that part, which now the thing about it is a very large plot
point. It is actually a very large plot point.
Yes. Yeah. So it wasn't just he wanted to go to a warm spot. That was the whole plan.
I was like, well, he's probably going to throw himself in there, but like for what reason? I was like to open up a new rift.
Rift, yeah. So what it was going to do is once it mixed with that, it was going to cause a chemical reaction to basically put poison in the air to kill all life on Earth, so they can finish terraforming the planet. And so they figured out a really clever thing is that wasn't put forward in the first movie at all.
No.
We just know they were coming here to destroy us so they could take over.
Yeah.
And Newt and Herman figured that out when they both drifted with that kaiju brain, Alice, and figured that out, right? Well, technically Alice was the first one Newt drifted with, not the one that him and Herman did. I misspoke. That was a different one. That was the one from the baby. Yeah, so they use that, and they're like, oh, actually, if we look at all this, we don't have to, in the real world, we don't know the direction they were going. There's no, their direction was interrupted by Jaeger fights, but they were all going somewhere, but then they like, oh, the trajectory, and they just obviously extrapolated to that, so that was a really clever way of doing it to show, like, that's what it was. Just so well done that way. And actually, the lady who wrote the screenplay for this... actually, was she the story writer or the screenplay? I can't remember which one she was. She's actually getting a lot of offers right now. She's a big name right now in the world, yeah. Which is really well, because she did a really good job with this fucking movie. Like, taking something she had nothing to do with the first time and utilizing a lot of it into this one and making a really good sequel. Like, this is like Die Hard 2 good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Die Hard 2 is a good movie, but if you compare it to the other, the first one is definitely not as good, but it's good. It's the same way.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim 2, Pacific Harder.
Yeah.
So you're saying in Pacific Rim 3, Sam Jackson's going to be in it?
Or a black sidekick again who's going to be sassy.
John Boyega. Sam Jackson.
Fuck yes, okay?
Let's make it happen, Sam.
Get all these kaijus off, kaijus off my motherfucking planet. We didn't practice that ahead of time. That's just how we think.
Yep.
All right, kids. Oh, that was almost perfect. I talked a little longer, but whatever, that happens. We're here to talk about another movie.
Which movie is that?
Ready Player One.
I'm ready.
Michael, Player One. Same thing, but you can elaborate more because we can spend a little more time on this or do the same thing. But did you like it? Three things you liked and one you were surprised by. Go.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, you did.
It was really, really good. My three favorite things about it was... my first favorite thing is also kind of my surprise. We all read the book.
How dare you.
And so going in, we knew obviously there's going to have to be pretty significant changes to the book, or else they're going to be just cramming a shit ton of stuff into whatever, like a 2-hour runtime. Was not going to be enough time to cram in the amount. If they're going to keep the clues and the whole, you know, plot points, just that wasn't going to make sense. And we had like kicked around some ideas about, well, do they jump in right before they find the second key, since things really start in the book, start kicking off, and just kind of tell the story up till then.
Everyone figured out the first key.
Yeah.
Now the hardest one is the second one. Because in the book, that's exactly how it happens.
Yeah. And there's a lot of time in the book. Like, it's a good chunk of book going into until someone figures out the second one. And then it kind of rolls pretty quick from there. So we didn't know exactly how it was going to be done. They essentially changed everything about the clues and how to get the keys right from the get-go.
Yeah, all the tests. The only one, and I don't want to step on your toes again, the only one that's similar was the last one.
Right. But it wasn't even similar in terms of like how you got there, though, either. It was just like the final actual Easter egg itself was the only one that was the same in the book. But that's what I liked is how they did it. It's like right from the get-go, he mentions it's a race and it's too hard to beat, and it's 5 years of people doing this race. And I'm like, okay, that's a good way to get us past the, you don't have to go through the whole Dungeons and Dragons shit. You don't, you know what I mean? You don't have to explain the school planets. You don't have to explain that he's a high school kid. You know what I mean? Like you get to skip all of that. And now you're just, it's a race is the first clue. Someone figured out the clue. Now they all do the race and no one's ever beaten the race. Yep. So you're like, all right, cool. So now you got to figure out how to beat the race, and we get that pretty quick. The second one being a movie that you have to go into harkens back to the book saying how, you know, part of obtaining the keys where you had to reenact the movie.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, they're bringing that in to the world and they're using actual footage from the movie, this case being The Shining, which was a brilliant fucking choice.
But not just that, the way they did it, because the clue meant how they had to find what it was and then what it was. But it's also, it's still, and we'll get to why this is so good. It just goes into the way the book was done, because there's all these real life details about it, about being how it was a piece of work that was hated by the creator.
Which was fantastic.
Which is a very well-known thing.
Yeah, so especially in pop culture. What I'm getting at for the whole part one of this is they changed all the clues, but still made them make sense and have the same vibe as the clues in the book.
Yep.
Like, again, having the author of the book co-write the screenplay, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Obviously went a long way into making that work. And I'm sure Spielberg and the writer and everyone sat down like, look, this is what we have access to. Make it work with this. Yeah. Like, just and that these are the properties that we have.
Yeah.
Let's figure this out and kind of rewrite your book, essentially, with this stuff. And they did a great job. Number two favorite thing was the visuals. I was a little worried that when they're in the Oasis, I was going to get sick of the way it looked, because I didn't want to feel like I was watching an animated movie.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to have the vibe of a live action movie. And that might sound silly because it goes back and forth, but the important stuff happens in the Oasis, and I didn't want it to feel like they're copping out with a cartoon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's, I was a little worried about that, but it looked phenomenal. And you kind of forget that they're, because some of the avatars are so ridiculous that you kind of don't really, it doesn't bug you.
But they look real. Like H, for example, look like a monster.
Yeah. And then they go back and forth properly in there too.
Yeah.
To where you don't get lost while being in the Oasis. You kind of just get to go back and forth as they're going back and forth.
Because you see a lot of people in their rigs interacting exact same moment. It's not just he takes off the headset, he's out. You see him using it, but in the real world, so you kind of see his environment.
Right. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And like I said, the visuals themselves, I mean, just again, going back to that first race, holy shit, that thing was crazy. It was just chock full of cool little visual Easter eggs. And the King Kong looked fucking amazing in it. Like, God. It looked better than Peter Jackson's King Kong. And I know that was a while ago, but it wasn't that long ago. And that was a King Kong movie. This is not a King Kong movie, and that King Kong still looked better.
It is 5 minutes.
Yeah. So that's pretty dope. My third favorite thing, and this is kind of similar to the clues, but just in terms of the rewriting they did, just in general, to make it work for a movie, and not like not just the clues, but everything from the fact that all five of the high five all stay together as a group. Artemis got them all together. The has like a what do they call them, the rebellion or the resistance?
Resistance, yeah.
Yeah, like everything that they did different, and they did a lot of shit different. Like this adaptation is a great adaptation, but nothing's really the same other than the general idea.
Yeah,
which is it's a weird fine line to walk. Like you could have easily walked out of this movie saying, they changed everything. That's not even the fucking book. But they changed everything, but it's still
it's the story.
It's the heart of the book. And the fact that they were able to do that and then perform it properly, I thought was very well done.
And to that point though, too, the beats of the story of the book are the beats of the story of the movie.
Yeah.
They kept those in a way, but they did it in a way where they could condense what was happening by just giving you that elapsed time feel.
Yeah.
Instead of like and a then, montage, but it like, was just like, this is what
like
it
when Percival tells Artemis that he loves her at that dance, like that happens like a good almost halfway through easily. The book.
Yeah.
That happened like they just met. And like that felt, that part was like almost felt rushed, but you're like, not really though, because they say enough realizing like how important all this is, and they give enough of them as in time together.
No, so not just that though, there's a line at the beginning of the race, the first race,
yeah,
where he sees her and he's like, oh, that's yeah, her.
I've seen all of her streams, yeah, I've seen all of her Twitch. Yeah.
And like that leads you to believe in his brain
he probably,
yep,
yeah,
he's fallen infatuated with her already. And then now that he met her and she's as yeah. cool as he's built her up to be.
But that could have been a big was a landmine they avoided in this adaptation, because like I said, if you would have told me before I saw the movie, hey, that whole sequence right there happens 15 minutes into the movie, like that's too fucking quick, dude. Yeah. Like they're not building anything up if they're jumping right to that 15 minutes into the movie. But it was done well enough and everything, you know, flowed at a good rate. But yeah, just I guess that's kind of like two things in one, but I'm counting it as my third, because like I said, just somehow changing everything to make it work for a movie, but still keeping the heart and the vibe and the feel of the book.
And not making it 5 hours long.
And not making it 5 hours long, because it very easily could have been a fucking 22-episode season of TV had they adapted the book straight from. I thought that was really cool and really well done. Biggest surprise is all the little fucking things that they did were able to sneak in there. I mean, yeah, fucking Chucky. That fucking Chucky in there be a little monstrous killing machine.
Yeah.
And they didn't spend a lot of time on it, but it was definitely a cool high beat of the movie. They had the movie version Ninja Turtles, yep, in there, which was fucking amazing.
Yeah. The new movies,
yeah.
The Michael Bay ones.
Yeah. Which I loved those movies, and seeing them in that, I was like, yes,
because you realize at that point it's part of pop culture, so yeah, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, obviously.
Jason Voorhees was in it, Batman's in it,
two versions,
they had, well, Batwoman is in it too,
Batgirl
yeah. Batgirl's in it for Arkham a brief
Knight. Arkham Knight showed up,
Harley Quinn's in it, like
three different versions of Harley, yeah, too,
yeah. And just every, like all the cool shit that they were managed, and like that's, I'm so excited to go back and watch this again, because now, like you were talking about with Pacific Rim Uprising, once you seen it once, you're the first time you see a movie, you're just watching the movie. You, yep, you're
experiencing the movie,
exactly.
Yeah,
yep. This is a movie where now we can go back, we know what's going on, we can start paying attention to little things now that maybe we might have missed, and I have a feeling there's 1,000 little things that we missed in this movie, just the nature of like the battle scenes and everything like that. It was It's gonna be fun to rewatch this a couple times in theaters, and it's gonna be one of those ones when it finally comes out on digital, you're gonna be pausing it and scanning the scenes to see what you could find.
Yeah. Wear out that digital copy.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna break the shit out of it. But yeah, that's mine.
Joseph.
For number one, I have to lump all of
it. Did you like it?
Oh yes, I loved it. Sorry, I just skipping right into the things I liked about it, because these
were only three, really, Joseph.
That's why I'm lumping all the Easter eggs into one. I was like, can I do the movie for the first one, like the whole thing, and then the movie for the second one?
These are yours? Yes, you can.
And then the movie for the second one.
And then wait, the third one, the movie?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Third one. No, so like the Easter eggs, or not the Easter eggs, the challenges that he basically goes through to get all the keys. Phenomenal. The first one that he goes into, it sets up your characters, it sets up your rules for the game and the movie, and it's just a fun ride to sit there and be like, that's a Tyrannosaurus Rex from Jurassic Park, that's King Kong, you know, and that's, you know, that, you know, the Batmobile from the 66 Batmobile.
It's Cannonball Run.
It's like, Cannonball, yeah.
It's Cannonball Run the race, like, you know.
That's Bigfoot right there. That's fantastic. It's absolutely awesome to just sit there and look at all these things. And then the second key was the...
Shining.
Yeah, it was the Shining, which the door opens up and I'm like... That's the movie. I'm like, that's the movie.
They're in the lobby. You're like, oh shit.
I'm pretty sure there's nothing
in the trailers.
Oh, that was a complete surprise.
Yeah. Because when that happened, I was like, fuck, did they hint at this at all? Because this is the movie. Like, this, they're using actual footage from the movie. So
you go down and you see that the typewriter is going and the. Pages are slowly flying away, and it's like it's a timer, and then you see the fucking little tennis ball come bouncing.
Both back. Of us, same thing. Fuck that. Yeah. Nope. Don't do it.
Because you know what's going to happen. Sure enough, H goes walking.
And
down.
H saying that is the Shining scary. I've never seen the movie. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh no, he's going to get fucked with so hard.
But then, what's his name? The one with the swords.
Did you read the book?
The Shining.
Right? Yeah. This you may not know, and I'm going to bring this up while you're talking about it. What I thought was really clever is, spoiler alert, the answer to it was a very big part of the book that was completely avoided in the actual movie, which was the ballroom plays a huge, huge part in the story and the degradation of Jack as a not a good father by any means in the book, and less and not as much in the movie. He's not a very attentive dad in the movie, but... The ballroom scene with all those dancers, they weren't zombies dancing above a glowing green pit, but that was him losing his mind and being sucked in. And the picture you see of...
It shows like everybody in that ballroom.
Yep, all of them in the ballroom, and then you see them together. Yeah. That's from the book.
Yeah. Well, there's the pictures in the movie.
Yes, yeah. But too, so it plays the same way because when he goes into that ballroom, that's when he loses his shit and the hotel gets him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I thought was really cool about that. But anyways, go ahead.
But yeah, so you have the ball goes down and he follows it, and you see the two little girls, and you're just like, I don't know if they recast those girls.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Or if it was, like I said, the original film that they did.
It's actual footage.
I think it's real footage.
Yeah.
Because I'd have to go back and rewatch.
It has been a few years since I've seen The Shining.
Because I don't remember the little girls walking into the elevator. But scene right there.
That scene, they don't. That them in the elevator is not that scene. That's them with him in the hallway.
Right.
And they go around the corner.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you get them. You get H trying to open up the doors,
and you're just like,
I know what's gonna happen. Blood's gonna come running out.
But part of it was like, are they gonna let this hallway get rushed with blood in this movie? Yeah. Like, this is not.
And what's funny about that, I was thinking that, I was like, are they gonna do this? But then I thought, wait, they had Goro get a chest burster pop out covered in blood earlier.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's gonna go. Like, they're just gonna let it happen.
I had so much love for that because I knew it was coming. I knew that. I had never seen that scene before.
You know,
but I sat there and went, is that going to be a chestburster?
You know what I thought?
Total Recall.
Yeah,
I
went.
I thought it was gonna be Quato.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be Quato. That was my first thing, it was gonna be her. Chest, and I saw her face. I was like, oh, he's gonna get some weird advice from
Quade. You know,
I totally went to Chestburster because that's, you know, Aliens is one of my favorite, and she was using the I forgot what the name of the gun is, but the pulse rifle.
I saw that, I tried to slap her off at one point.
You did in the ballroom scene, or the floating dance scene. Yeah, which was absolutely fantastic. Going back to the Shining, you get the where the girl, the naked girl in the bathtub. Yeah. And I totally remember that from the book and from the movie, where it's just like, that's going to be some zombie girl.
Yeah, and they even did the mirror thing.
Where Jack
looks in the mirror and sees, I was like, oh, fuck, yes.
And, yep. And like you said, it went almost just mature, where yep. she's totally naked. You can see from the back that she's totally naked.
Yep. They didn't show butt crack, and they didn't show boobies, but it was enough to know, like, oh, this is exactly how it happens in the movie. The difference is, instead of being the shot over Jack Nicholson's shoulder to see her naked, H is so big, the camera over
his
shoulder.
And he's standing at a weird kind of angle to where his arm is covering nipple.
Because he's like,
he's just like, okay, I'm going to go with this.
Excuse me, naked lady. Yeah. I guess I'm going to go with this. I was like, that's awesome. And he's like, wait, what? Yeah.
But then she just comes at him with a knife and just,
Oh, and the axe comes to the door.
And then the axe,
and then I was like, are we going to see fucking Jack Nicholson?
I was hoping.
Were you a little disappointed?
When they showed the legs. Yes. And I was like,
in the snow, in the maze, I was like, dude, they're going to show Jack Nicholson. And they never do.
Oh, you saw the bell bottoms that were ratty and covered in snow. But I was like, so close.
So good.
So close.
So that was number one. number two is, God damn it.
It's tough, right?
It's tough.
I'm surprised you got them so quick.
Because I also want to include, like, the soundtrack was just so much fun, listening to all that 80s music and stuff like that. But no, I'd have to go with the CG was...
Fuck, so good.
Was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit on the way home, is, the fact that it's not just it was really good, but it was used in a way that it made sense. Like you were saying, you were afraid it was going to be too cartoony because they were going to spend a lot of time there. They were caricatures of things. They were avatars like anything else, but they had like this really cool design to them.
Yeah.
And they felt like they were video games, like they were supposed to, but there was enough of it, like I was saying with H, where it just looked like a metal... like an ogre that was mixed with mechanical parts, you know what I mean?
Well, and they put them in real world settings too.
Very much so, yeah.
Which helped a lot. Like the whole time in The Shining, like there's if people are listening to this and they haven't seen, which is a good chance they haven't seen it yet, because this is going to come out on the day or the weekend. But when we say they go into the world of The Shining, like they're in it. Like if you were watching the movie, those characters are in the movie.
Yep.
That background is not a CGI looking thing. It's not
the computer Overlook Hotel. That's the Hotel they filmed in.
That's the hotel itself. Like that's like watching the actual movie. So, like I said, they're putting these avatars in real world situations, which kind of again helps you not have to be in the Oasis the entire time and let you get kind of over flooded with a whole digital world, you know, so it still makes it feel like more of a live action movie than it does a CGI movie, which helps into, like, I don't want to say giving it credibility, but like letting it be taken seriously as a big blockbuster movie, you know.
And also it plays up to the fact that it's such a big, vibrant virtual world where if you were the player and you were experiencing these things and they didn't seem real to you, and there's a part with Sorrento where they trick him, spoilers, but at this point I don't give a fuck here, and it feels even real to him when he's in it, that's the same way, like, when they go to The Shining, obviously, he has seen that movie so many times. Like, you know, Wade has seen that movie so many times. So he knew what was happening in it.
Yeah.
And that's why they were able to pull H out of the maze and everything. But you'd have to feel like it was real and you were in it, because it's supposed to be a virtual world.
Yeah.
Like VR now, like humans we have right now, it's definitely not like, I don't ever think of, oh, it's virtual reality. It feels real. No, it doesn't. It doesn't look real at all. But this, that has to be, because that's why it's so addicting and it's so great, because it feels like you're really doing these things, because in your head, in your visuals, everything is that way.
Yeah.
You're experiencing it. And that's why the upgrades to the suit, where he gets the suit, they can, the full body feel, you want that, because you like, and it's that thing where like, I want to feel the, because it looks real. Yeah. I want to feel like it's real. That sort of thing. It was fucking nuts.
Yeah.
And your third one?
My third one is seeing all of the, I didn't write anything down or anything. seeing all the characters and stuff from different franchises. Like we said before, you know, in the trailers, you see the Spartans and you see, but seeing the Turtles in there was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
It was really fun to be able to sit there and like go, every video game character, that's the Serenity. Too. That's
yeah.
Serenity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, this and that and this and that. And it didn't really take away from the movie for me, because it was so much fun to just be like, God, that was Duke Nukem who just got nuked.
Yeah. Right, like, there. It is. And like to that, it's like they do these things and they're obviously part of the story is to have that. That's it's so steeped in pop culture and that's what he was obsessed with. But it's done, I would almost say, just like the book does it, where it talks about something and later on he's like, oh, he takes flight in his X-Wing. You know what I mean? Yeah. You see it, but then there's this litany of shit just in the background.
Just happening.
And there's things like when they went to H's like lab.
Yeah.
And in the background you can see the ship from Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, so fuck. Spike's red ship, the ones with the cone.
Yeah,
it's in the background.
Damn it, I missed that.
But past that is I think I know for sure one was the Viper from Battlestar Galactica, the old school one,
uh-huh.
The really rounded edged one, and below it I think is the newer one. And I was like, I'm still listening and paying attention, but they do it in a way where they weren't out of focus.
Uh huh.
Because it's a video game, everything was visible.
Yeah.
Because you're not working with real people, so you don't have to do this really drastic, because that's the thing with like real life. It's very hard to shoot a scene where everything's in focus, because there's a trick, and it's really hard to do if you're going to move that camera. So being in a virtual world that felt very real, you could do it because you could literally make everything in focus, unless you want to. They do defocus at one point, mm-hmm. especially when it's focusing on, he's pulling up he opens the lunchbox, and it has all the ships in it.
Yeah.
It's like the,
one of the Battlestar Galactica ships.
They had the Battlestar Galactica, they had the ship from Alien. Like, oh, yeah, it was so.
The Sulaco. Yeah. I was like, oh, another Alien reference.
Yeah.
I love
it. Oh, yeah, dude. It was so much, yeah. Mm. And did you have a surprise one?
Oh, the surprise was how they were able to take the book and update it for the movie, but make it fit into a movie.
Yeah.
So that everything was there, but it was different. So it was fun to be able to, I know what's going to happen in the book, but I didn't know what was going to happen in the movie. Because, yes, the same general plot was there, the same characters were
there.
This
is how.
It's just how it happens. Yep. What were the different trials? Because there were, how many trials were there in the book?
There's three.
There was three?
Yeah, there's three keys.
There were three keys.
Okay. There's still the same one, Bronze,
but, yeah.
Jade, and Crystal.
Okay. But it was so much more fun. It was so much fun just to see how they adapted that. And the fact that, you know, from the book, you have one of the characters dies, but he doesn't in the movie.
Yep.
So that was, you know, a few characters. Interesting change. So, yeah, that was my surprise, just that they were able to change everything, and yet it's still a fun thing to watch.
Yeah, and I equate that, you and I were talking about, again, when we left the movie and I was walking across that massive theater, movie theater, to go to the empty bathroom, that much like one of my favorite movies from last year, the adaptation was a love for the original material, mm-hmm. but updated enough for even hardcore fans to still be surprised by stuff.
Yeah.
So, like in It, all the monsters were changed for the most part, or done in a different way, but it still had the same effect. Mm-hmm. And this is the exact same way. And what Mike was saying, you have the three quests you go on. The keys are the same. The story's the same. But even the beats, the way they did it, Parsifal was the first one to get the first key.
Yep.
Because he figured it out and he figured out the trick. Artemis was the first to get the second key. And then, of course, the spoiler alert, the third key was easily obtained by Percival because he figured out what exactly it was. It was an Easter egg mm-hmm. that was hidden because obviously that's the whole point of it. That's how you get the third key is you realize it's an Easter egg because all of them were Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Made specifically for them or for that. And you have to know his backstory, you know, and how he was obsessed with pop culture and all these different things, and how he lived his life or didn't live his life as we know, but then you have that one little thing about he got the quarter, which is the extra life that helped him come back OG zeroed on the board, but still. Back,
yeah,
and he comes back in. He's got a T-shirt and jeans on with some fucking Converse. He doesn't have any armor. That's one of the other
things.
Know.
Is there was a handful of little things where it was like for people who have read the book, be like, "Yo, you're gonna get this before anybody else." Like when he gets that quarter and he flicks it back to the guy and is like, "No," and he flicks it back. You're like. That's his extra life.
Yeah,
like he doesn't have to play the perfect game. Like that's his extra life.
He gets that do over.
Yeah, and you could tell like because I'm sure you got the both of you were like that's his extra life. Yeah. Jen was even like she hit my arm. She was like the extra life. I was like yeah for sure. But you could tell the surprise in the theater. It was like okay, these people didn't read it. Because there was a legit shock.
Yeah, there was a gasp.
Yeah. And that was cool because, like I said, and there's a couple other moments, not as big as that, but a couple other moments where had you read the book, you're not, you're on a little bit of an extra, you know, high ground. You're not on the same playing field as people who hadn't because there's a couple little things where you're like, you're going to get this before anybody else does. Or like, you know... Like at the end when the guy's playing the game and he's trying to beat it, you know he shouldn't be trying to beat it.
Yep,
so you're not worried about the time frame there. Where everyone else is worried, what if you know, like people who are watching the movie are probably worried, what if he wins? Like if you read the book, you're like, no, he doesn't have to win.
Yeah.
Like he, you know, let him beat it. He's just gonna fucking fall through the ice because you know. So yeah, that was cool too. How, like I said, it wasn't a straight fucking everything from the book, but there's a handful of things where if you read the book, it was like a little wink and a nod to you. Yep. So it was kind of cool little feature in there too.
Yeah, even the throwaway Star Wars reference because the Star Wars was a huge part of the book.
Yeah, because then obviously in the 80s.
Yeah.
Star Wars is a huge part of pop culture.
And obviously, you know, we figured that obviously they wouldn't be able to do it in this movie because it's not their property or anything.
Visually, you can't do it visually. Yeah, you can't have Parsifal flying around in an X-Wing.
But the fact that they nodded to it where what's his name?
Sorrento
was just like, you know, we can give you the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And Wade's like, you can?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, it was fantastic. So, that's me. You, Cody?
I adored this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I
walking out, you're already saying that this is your favorite movie of the year.
Yeah, no.
You're calling your shot. You're saying this is the best movie of this year.
It's gonna be a tough one, and the reason why is because A, it was fucking so good. B, they did such a good job adapting it from the source material, but still making it. Its own thing where it's like you do not have to read the book to enjoy this movie. But if you read the book, you'll enjoy this movie so much fucking more. I guarantee it.
If you go back to read the book.
Yep. If you read the book at all, post or pre seeing the movie, you're going to enjoy both of them that much more.
Yeah.
Because watching it in, and Mike said this, even before we saw the movie, when we saw the trailers and stuff, seeing the these key moments that you can say, oh, that's this part from the book. And I think you even said it because you saw a bunch of the trailers first before you saw the movie. We eventually beat you into reading the book.
Right.
And then you saw the trailer, the big trailer, and you're like, oh, I do. I see this.
Yeah,
and I think this is what it's from in the book. And when you watch the movie, that's exactly how you feel. But you you still get excited. And I legit was like, are they going to kill one of these kids?
Yeah.
Because in the book, they do in a very terrible way.
Yeah.
But it's like this. I was like,
because there's a fucked up.
Because there's a spot in it where she gets in the back and she's obviously pointing the gun at Parzival. Wade at that point, because it's not in the virtual. And Dido starts fighting her, right? And I was like, oh, this is where he dies.
Yeah.
This is how it happens.
Could have easily been there.
Yeah, she's going to shoot him, but, then they're going to get her out or knock her out or whatever happens to be. And I was like, this is going to be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do it. I was like, I like this so much better. I was like, that's how it needs to be. And it was not because I didn't like that in the book. The book is, it's devastating in the book when it happens.
And that's what it needed to be in the book. Yep.
But this, because
you couldn't set that up in the movie, it wouldn't have had the same emotional effect.
Exactly. It wouldn't have mattered as much if those two would die. It's like, we just met them, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So I like that a lot. So my three favorite things is going to be... So my number one's going to be the visuals, because as we talked about, they're phenomenal. And they're not phenomenal and like, oh, they're super cool to see all these things. They're the kind of phenomenal where I'm upset that I'm not going to get a live action like Iron Giant movie.
There's a lot of stuff that...
How cool is it to see the Iron Giant be a hero again, though? You know what I mean?
And
I thought it was fantastic. It was Denton all in it.
Two-part, because she was making it as a commission. Yeah. I thought it was a really clever way of doing it. Because that's not, H didn't do that in the book. That's a whole new thing for that character in the movie. But even the part where, it's fighting against Mechagodzilla, which is ridiculous to say out loud, and it gets destroyed, essentially. Mm-hmm. It gets burnt. The fucking Gundam swings in and is... I was so rock hard at that point. It was ridiculous.
The fact that he begins in that classic stance as well, in the air.
He flips out of the plane of the transport, which, by the way, the transport was Serenity.
Yeah.
So fucking good. I'm so glad they brought it back. Just that one scene, you go into the line of just an amazing lineup of ships. I was like, this is from... but he comes swooping in, and it's the bay door... classic fucking Firefly style, you know?
Yep.
You were going to swoop in and pick Mal up, who's fucking in trouble.
Yep.
It's the bay doors open. He's puts on the fucking power glove. I was like, I know you can't use that because you don't have Nintendo stuff, but that's the power glove.
Yeah.
He even goes here on the pad. I was like, you bastards. You did that just in case you could get the power glove and you would just substitute it in.
Oh, that
would
have been awesome.
Yes. Come on, the wizard. That part is so good. But the Iron Giant part, the thing that got me is you see it use the body to make the bridge. They're going across. You have I-Rock shooting the fingers out, and you have that sorrowful look. I'm trying to do all I can do to help, to save you, and I can't. And then it falls in lava and does the Terminator thing.
That
I was like, I legitimately... I was welling. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I almost cried.
I was like,
I almost cried. Not because of that moment.
It's because of all the stuff together.
And then it's like, hey, remember how you felt when this moment happened?
Remember when you cried as a child watching Terminator 2?
Remember when you cried watching a fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger movie? Yeah.
That wasn't Twins.
Yeah, of course. No one doesn't not cry during Twins.
Yeah, well, if you do, you're a monster. Why don't you go back to watching Tin Cup, you fucking robot? Because no one cries during Tin Cup because it's a terrible movie.
It is a terrible movie.
But And I'll fight anybody who says it's not a terrible movie, by the way. Just saying. So, yeah, the visuals, there's so much. And it's so much that if I wasn't so invested in the story, as Joe said, it would be so fucking distracting.
Yeah.
And I think they did it in a really clever way where you could see it, but it wasn't taking you away from everything. Because I was spotting stuff, as I was saying, like Spike's ship and the Vipers and stuff. I was seeing all these things because they did show it to you, and they showed it to you in such a clever way. And it wasn't like, there's a lot of them where it was like a one shot.
Yeah.
But like with Spike's ship, I really wanted to point it out to you, but I was so enthralled in what was going on, even though I know the fucking story and I know exactly what was going to happen. Like, I should be just picking apart the movie, like, looking for all these things.
Yeah.
But I was so invested in it. I was like, oh, God, what are they going to do next? And like Mike was saying with the three tests, and this brings my second one, is the way they did adapt the story over. And like I've said several times already, they took those same beats and that same feel, but they condensed it in a way where you didn't lose anything.
Yeah.
Because in the book, the reason it's so long is you have to describe all the stuff. You have to describe exactly what's happening. In a movie, you have all the visuals, and they did an amazing job. Mm-hmm. Hence my number one. So you get all of that detail and that richness that is, because you know it's steeped in pop culture. They tell you that right away. And you get to see all of it. So mm-hmm. you don't have to hear about, you don't have to read about it, like all the detail of like, oh, he has an asteroid base and inside his hangar is all these ships.
Yeah.
You get to see it.
Yeah.
You get to see it is a hangar. There's an iron giant being built, but in the back you have all these ships.
Yeah.
And then even they go, say, the little lunchbox is full of more ships.
Mm-hmm.
But they're too big to, you know, do whatever. So obviously she's probably building these other ones for people doing commissions, is how she makes the money. But like, that's there. You know what I mean? You see them. And I was like, there's little things like that. The scenes with the, like the two scenes with Serenity, right?
Yeah.
You see it fly into line of all those other ships going into the dance place. You see it shoot out of the clouds and have Dido on it, and he's gonna, he puts on the power glove and turns in the Gundam and is just, I'm like, well, obviously someone's pandering for jobs. Mm-hmm. Like this is all the stuff I want to make now, right? You know, like we just have to get people to write them, because it's all they need to do. And even to Mike's point, the little stuff like the amazing God, the amazing King Kong. It felt like King Kong from back in the day, because he was on a building, he's jumping across, he's swatting, you see the planes flying around, but he's swatting at cars. The only thing I wish they could have done is made the T-Rex look like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park, because they couldn't, because it's copyrighted. But I also wanted to swat a Jeep. I wanted it to be a Jeep that it was chasing.
Yeah.
Like a reddish Jeep.
Like a red and white Jeep. Yeah. You don't have to put that the logo on it.
That might have been a little too on the nose. They might have tried it, and someone was probably like, no.
Like, it just went, like, even if it didn't get swatted and it got away or whatever, like, it ducked, it went through the legs or whatever, you know, it would have been amazing. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, that T-Rex is fucking up cars left and right. Like, there were some Sixers getting booted for show.
Oh, yeah.
But that would be my second one, is the adaptation, the ability to make it so good. And I equate it to it because it was so well done that fans of the book and even the original miniseries or the two-part movie will enjoy it because it has a lot of nods, but also is original.
Yeah.
And this is the same way. Again, you don't have to have read the book to enjoy the movie, but if you did, you enjoy it that much more. And if you go back and read the book, I think you're going to enjoy the movie and the book.
And if any asshole on the internet this weekend goes like, oh, the book was better, like, if people are starting, if they
it is try the to, same thing.
If they try to bash the movie by elevating the book, like, I get the book is fantastic. The book is one of the best books. But
it's a geek holy grail.
But don't be that asshole on the internet bashing the movie because of the book. Like, this is exactly... Like, I don't, it's weird being hindsight being 2020. Like, I don't know. I'm not a creative enough person to think of other ways where it could have been done better. I don't think it could have been done better. I think this was the best possible outcome from adapting this book. And we had openly talked about how they're going to do it. How are they going to do this? What are they going to throw in? Like, this was the best case scenario for adapting this book, and they fucking nailed it. Like,
and the throwaway line that Joe's talking about, the Star Wars line, is a direct, that's a nod to the reader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because in the book, Star Wars ships and stuff are very heavy in it. He flies an X-Wing.
Yeah.
You know? They talk all about it, you know? Like, there's this thing. With saying that line, that is a direct, a straight up, just, they might as well just pause me and go, you're welcome, readers.
Yeah.
And then continued on. Because that's exactly what it was. And it was the way it was delivered and the way it was reacted to in the movie was fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Because he dangled that Millennium Falcon carrot right in front of his face. And he had that, like, legit, like, you can do that? And I was like, oh, man. Because
you knew that, that's what the fans would want.
Yep. Yes, you'd want that. You'd want Steven Spielberg to direct anything that has the Millennium Falcon in it.
Yeah.
Because everybody's always wanted Steven Spielberg to do a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't because of his friendship with Lucas. But anyways, no, that is like those little things like that. And there's a bunch of those in the book or in the movie that are nods to the book. I mean, obviously the plot points of the story are from the book, and that's what I was talking about. It was amazing. But there's like little things like the fact that he turns into the Gundam versus he turns into what does he turn into in the book?
It was a Gundam.
No, it wasn't. What's that fucking Japanese guy? He's the giant.
Because they went into it and he still had the Gundam. You're talking about Wade was able to turn into.
So Saito was at the end. He had the ability to do the Gundam, but he did. He turned into not Cyberman. Someone's gonna correct me, I know, and I'm gonna remember it later.
I know, I have the toy of it. I honestly do.
Yeah. Anyways, so there's that things Ultraman. Like that. That's Ultraman. Yeah, he turns into Ultraman.
Yeah.
Because
good pull.
Yeah.
Daito had the Gundam, and then but Saito had the Ultraman, and so he took that because I have that backwards. Saito had the Gundam, but because of the death of Saito, he decided to use Ultraman instead, and that's when you get that part, and that's who fights Mecha Godzilla. And this one, it's the Gundam, because you don't have the sacrifice of Saito to have to worry about, Daito. So it's so fucking good, so goddamn good. And the third thing that I loved. Besides the whole movie, was I think the perfect casting.
Yes.
I wasn't worried about it, but seeing their performances by everybody and the fact the cast is literally fucking essentially 8 people deep, 9 people, maybe 10 people deep. You have Sorrento, you have, it's 12 or whatever. It's not a very big cast for the most part. Of main characters, there's a ton of people in this fucking movie. Extras like a motherfucker.
Oh yeah,
good lord.
Tons.
But yeah, the cast is fantastic. Ty Sheridan, he's always good in stuff other than X movies, but that's not his fault because X movies are terrible. But Olivia Cook, I don't think I know her from anything. She's the one who played Artemis. Samantha / Artemis. She was really good. Mendelsohn is always good no matter what, and he's a fucking fantastic villain.
Yeah.
I know him from like 3 different things. I know him from Rogue One, I know him obviously from this, and I know him from Bloodlines on
How Netflix. Great was his avatar too.
Yes. The scumbaggy looking motherfucker who looks like a mix between like if Colossus is a real human being
and Superman
almost like a He-Man. His thighs would be bigger. But I was like, yeah, like for sure. That was the I think my third favorite thing is because it was so the casting was so done so well. And my surprised one, which should have been how good it was adapted, but my surprise one was the overall how well everything was executed in it. Because it could, like Mike said, I think it was Mike said, I think he said it when we're recording here, it could have been a jumbled pile of a mess. It could have been just funneled chaos.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was organized chaos. And it was organized chaos planned. That's the best thing about it. I was so surprised how well everything was done and how well it played with the story. It blew my mind. And it comes down to the fact that it was adapted by Ernest Cline, and he's the one that wrote the book, so obviously he has a little more insight into it. And the fact that we saw from the first trailer, like the very first sizzle reel trailer from Comic-Con, we saw the substitutions for a lot of the stuff they couldn't use. But like to Mike's point, is they are, I think it was Mike's point, might have been Joe's, that they brought a lot of more current stuff into it with a lot more of the video game stuff, because a lot of what you saw from in the book, the avatars were just themselves.
Yeah.
They weren't Battletoads. They weren't Spartans. They weren't, Overwatch characters.
Yeah.
Because you could get, like, just in modern day, you can get skins look like other things. Like Monster Hunter, for example, the new current game out.
And the book touched more on the fact that, he went in there for school. That's what he could use the Oasis for. He didn't have the money to travel to these different worlds. Yep. Obviously, you couldn't really flesh that out in the movie, so they changed it to you didn't have to have all that.
And he was happened to be lucky enough to be going to school on the learning planet he was on that happened to have
the first key
in the dungeon. It was like, it's just the reason he is the focus of the story in the book is because he is the lucky one that has it there. Mm-hmm. That could have been anybody else.
Yeah.
That could have been it, but because the reason we're following Wade is because he is that person. You know what I mean? But like I was saying to Joe on the way home, and this will be my last point, we can wrap up. I was going into it, I was very upset with the things TJ Miller was saying about I-Rock and how he was made for just the movie. We all know who read the book, I-Rock is a character who's very vital to the story, but isn't in it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I was upset is like you're saying that character didn't exist and was made for you for the movie. He's correct.
Yeah.
He's changed from what he was because the story has to be told differently.
Yeah.
But he is a different character in this.
The name's the only thing that's the same.
Yeah. He's not a Gunter. He's a fucking mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so well done. And the fact that when you first see him and then you first hear him is fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Because he's this big, scary-looking fucking dude with a metal skull chest cavity with holes in it, and he's got this ridged nose and all these... He just looks monstrous. Like, he looks like Skeletor Mumra fucked somehow and then got... Like, when they were fucking got, like, metal parts. You know what I mean? And he looks so terrifying, and then you hear T.J. Miller's voice. They didn't change it. Like, H's voice has changed, and his modifications. It's just T.J. Miller's voice, and you're like, that's fucking perfect.
That was really good.
Because he was snide, and he was like, these things. Even when he was trying to be, like, big and bad, he just sounded like T.J. Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he walked in the little VIP area with I call her cheerleader Harley Quinn and his other two, and he's like, he looks at him, get out. It still seems like it's just TJ Miller.
Yeah.
And even when he's talking like badass, it just sounds like TJ Miller talking. And I was like, this is fan. That was fantastic.
He was really funny.
Yeah.
Yep. And it felt like the weird, some people would say it's a bad thing about TJ Miller, but I kind of think it's a good thing. Like, TJ Miller is who he is as an actor. Like, if you're bringing him on to act in you want him to be TJ Miller.
You
in
want,
whatever you're having him in. He was definitely TJ Miller. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I don't know how much was written for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if Steven Spielberg was just like, this is the situation.
These are the lines you wrote. Please Miller them up. TJ the shit out of these lines.
Because, like, the like, voila, which is French for I found it.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
I found out who he is.
Yeah. Like, just shit like that, like, from knowing TJ Miller through his actual stand-up, his other roles, his social media, like, that's That's some straight up TJ Miller shit. And it fits in perfectly with this odd world.
Yep. Because he is this, you get that sense that he's just dumb fucking
nerd. I was really hoping for a real world shot of him.
Yeah. And you can see, like, you know.
Just being him.
It's just TJ Miller just fucking.
Like, oh, shit. You know, it's kind of like how after he got blown up, you know?
Yeah.
But that's
he chewed up every scene he was in, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Even the part, like, the part where he's in the dance thing and he's spying on them, and obviously he has that one girl who takes a picture, plant a microphone on him. So you can hear them, and he's just sitting there, and Sorrento calls him, and he just goes, I gotta go, and he just hangs up on him, like, in this nonchalant, like, asshole way. I was like, man, that was so good. So good. So, yeah.
Big thumbs up.
Yep.
Mike's got a big old thumb that was up.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. Good time.
Yeah, you know.
Good time.
So, yeah. Go see Ready Player One this weekend a couple times. And go see Pacific Rim Uprising if you haven't already, because it's really good too. But that's it for this week's episode of Comes Naturally. We are
Joe,
Mike.
I am Cody. And as usual, you fuckers just came naturally. Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.